This is SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.
This episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time is brought to you by Bluehost. It is a great company for your website or blog and very affordable, just $6.95 per month, and they offer great service and support. And setting up your blog couldn't be easier. Just one click of a button, and you can focus on your content. You don't have to worry about technology. That's how I like it. Go to sqpn.com/Bluehost for more information. And by the Amazon store. Click on the link on our website before you shop at Amazon, and your purchase will help support our show.
Why would you do this? You're going to blame me? You turned the mermaid into blood! I did something about it, which is more than what you can say. Undo your spell! Bring back the mermaid! And what? You'll win her over with your rainbow kisses and unicorn sticker? Considering that your plan failed, at least we can try!
Bring back the mermaids. Well, bring back the podcast. That is for certain, for sure. Welcome back to The Secrets of Once Upon a Time. We so missed you. And hopefully you missed us too, a little bit at least. We're ready to tackle a new season, season three already, of Once Upon a Time, this show that is about the world of fairy tales, but not as we know them. It turns everything upside down. And today we're going to talk about the first episode, which is called The Heart of the Truest Believer. Joining me today, a panel of four fairy tale and Disney experts, starting with Deborah. Hi, Deborah. Welcome back.
Hi.
You're a resident Disney expert.
Oh, I totally geeked out on this episode. Not that I found a lot, but there was, yeah. We'll talk about that later.
Definitely. Also joining us, Shelley. How are you?
Good afternoon, Father. I'm doing great.
It is so great to talk to you again after all this time. And your sister is also there, Lisa.
Yeah, I'm here.
How is life in Texas?
It is rainy today, but it's going really well.
And then finally joining us all the way from Groningen in the Netherlands, which is the country where I live as well, in case you didn't know that, is Inge. Hi, Inge. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Father.
Inge is our producer, and she has also prepared all the audio clips that you are about to hear during our discussion of this first episode. I'm Father Roderick. For those of you that are now listening for the first time to this show, I am a Catholic priest, which is kind of rare in the podcast sphere, but I am also a huge fan of Once Upon a Time and many other television shows, and that's what we like to talk about. We talk about the show, what it means, and also the deeper layers of all these stories, the secrets that might be right underneath the surface. And so let's dive right into the secrets of this first episode of the third season. And as always, we'll start with a audio clip, and then I've got a first question for all of you.
Oh, where's the communicator? We need to signal the home office.
There you go, T.
An office in the jungle. Huh. Who works there?
Who we work for is not your concern, kid. Just know that they take care of us.
Do they? Can they tell you how to get back home after you destroy magic?
We don't ask questions. We just believe in our cause.
Greg?
Yeah.
I'm not getting a status light on this thing.
Did you check the batteries?
What the hell is this? A toy?
It's a good thing you guys don't ask any questions.
Yeah, they don't ask any questions. They just believe. Well, I've got a couple of questions, and the first one is the usual one. And Inge, I'll start with you. What did you think overall of this episode?
It was an okay episode. So I was let down by some things.
Like what?
Well, I was like, oh, the home office, it's like in Lost, it's this big organization. And then it now evaporates into thin air. Oh, weird, it's just the Lost Boys. And oh, by the way, Tamara and Greg are now dead. I was like, okay, that's a letdown.
Interesting. I was so happy about that.
Lisa, what was your overall assessment of this episode?
Oh, I'm sorry. I actually like that they got rid of that because Tamir and Greg bothered me, and it was like a loose end that the writers realized didn't work. And so they just, you know, they just got rid of it. And I was really happy.
In Lost, you had these two characters that were introduced at one point to kind of spice it up. And then everybody hated them and they were killed off very quickly. This feels very much like that. I even forgot their names. That's how unimportant they were to the overall story.
But Greg isn't quite gone yet, I don't think.
No, he's not, but Tamara is.
Yeah. Which is good. I'm glad Rump finished her off.
That was delicious.
Overall, Deborah, on a scale from 1 to 10, what would you give this episode?
6 or 7. I mean, it wasn't the best episode, but after you haven't watched it for 4 months, it's like, oh. So it was good.
Shelley, what about you?
I agree with that assessment. I think a 7, a good solid 7. They've definitely introduced Neverland. We've got a nice setup for a good half season. We know what the arc, the story's going to be. I'm interested. It's nice and tight. And I liked the Home Office. And we spent a lot of time talking about the Home Office before, and I think they wrapped it up pretty nicely for me.
Right. Well, I think we're going to have quite a bit of discussion about this and about this episode. I would give this one actually an 8. I'll give it a 5 for special effects, though. My goodness, it still looks crappy after all these years. Come on. Can't you just invest a little bit of money and buy yourself a new computer to do all the green screen stuff? I mean, that ship, when it jumps out of the vortex, it looks worse than a video game. It's just not up to today's standards. But anyway, that's the only thing that keeps getting me out of the story. But perhaps I'm just not a true believer. And I just keep, you know, looking at the surface and not at the contents. What I like about this episode is the overall theme, though. And let's start our discussion with that. This is all about, well, it's actually, there are two big themes that are main themes in the entire series. And for me, it was family. That's a big one, and things are changing there. And it's faith. It is, do you believe? And what can faith do for you? And what happens to you if you don't have faith or if you lose faith?
Can I add a third theme?
Sure.
I think it's coming to terms with who you are, good or bad.
Yeah. Hmm. Identity. Self-identity.
Yep, there we go.
Can you give an example of where that happens in this series, where that theme appears?
Yes.
Go ahead.
I don't want to steal your thunder.
No, because you and I were probably going to say the same thing, and because you had written it in an email prior about Rump becoming Gold and Rumple becoming, you know, the same character now. Now we don't have to.
That wasn't go even ahead. The example I had in mind, so that's so cool you thought of that. I was thinking of the scene when Regina is talking to Hook, and she says, Greg Mandel told me I'm a villain. And villains don't get happy endings. Do you think that's true? And he says, well, if it is, we've all wasted our time. We've wasted our whole lives.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
There was another example when right before Rumple disappears from the ship, he confronts Emma that despite everything that happened, she still doesn't believe, and she's still that bounty person. She doesn't believe in the family, not in magic. And so this place is too dangerous for holding hands, so poof. Hmm. So that's also confronting Emma with her and identity. She's the savior, but she doesn't see herself as the savior. She's still that old
Now that you mention
push.
It, now that you mention mm-hmm. it, this is actually something that I wrote down at the end of the episode. And it is indeed an answer to the question, who am I, for Emma? You know, she's asked, what is your skill? You know, what do you contribute to our group? Are you the savior? Which is interesting because, you know, the word savior, I always associate that with Henry because he's the prototypical, like messiah type of guy. And she's, no, I'm a mother and I am right now your leader. And it's almost as if she has found who she is right now, who she needs to be. She is the mother. That at the beginning of the episode, in this flashback during the birth of Henry, she does not want to be, or she feels she can't be, and now she embraces that. She takes leadership, and she becomes the mother. Well, she already became it in previous seasons as well.
It kind of rubbed me the wrong way when in that scene, because she tells that to Regina, and who cared more for Henry during his life, being a mother, that's Regina, not Emma. So,
well, and two things there. Henry said both his mothers were coming for him. Both of them. They both love him equal. They're both coming. But back to where she said, I'm the mother, that scene. Who else started singing Don't You Forget About Me and thought of the Breakfast Club?
Don't
Nobody?
You forget
the way,
about me.
The way we do that, it was you just be who we are. Hero, villain, pirate,
which you're, I'm the mother and I'm the leader. And I'm sitting there going, and it's the end of the, you know, here's all your little stereotypes. And he's writing the essay at the end and we're all going to leave detention. Sorry.
No, I hadn't thought of that, but that's awesome.
Very cool.
But I thought it was great that they started out the episode showing Emma giving birth and not wanting to be the mother, not wanting to look at him, not wanting to hold him. And then it ends the episode by claiming that title. That, you know, that's, to me, that's, you know, Regina is his mom also, but throughout this, she's been more the villain. I mean, that seems to be her motivation more than love for Henry has been being the villain. So it was nice to see Emma grasp that and do it proudly.
The whole first two seasons have been a gradual walk for Emma in accepting her role as Henry's mother, both biologically and real, because she's always given him up, and they showed that angst, and that she did a wonderful job acting that scene. But even in the beginning, she knocked on the door, she didn't want to be alone. Here's Henry on her doorstep. Did you give up a baby 10 years ago? And she's like, I gave you up. Regina, you can't claim him. You gave him up. Everything's been about she gave him up, and now she's actually accepting.
Yes. And I think the it's not just Emma's journey of self-discovery. I think it happened to almost all the characters, from the stereotypical fairy tale characters. We've been following their journey. We start to care for them, and with them, we discover who they truly are, and it always is revealed in moments of trial. In moments where things go wrong, where there doesn't seem to be a happy ending, that's when they have to show their true colors. And there's another 80s song that you can play.
Oh, no.
True colors. But that's neither here nor there. But I think that this new season 3, they're in a new part of the universe. They're with the Lost Boys in Neverland, and apparently that too is going to be a trial for them. It's a dark world. It's not at all the Neverland that we know from the original story, and so it's in the confrontation of all these dangers and trials that probably will accompany these characters on the new journey of discovery. So I can wait to see what they're going to choose, who they want to be. Because it's not just who they were or who they're destined to be, but this series is all about choice and about, you know, making your own destiny in a way. So Rumpel seems to be on a... it's going in the wrong direction. He's reverting back to Rumpel. There's just not much of gold left there.
Did you love when Hook said, time for a costume change?
Yes.
That he came out and he's wearing the whole, you know, leather thing again.
Where did he get that from?
But what's he left magic? Behind the he's got magic back 100% here in Neverland, and he's
strong. But that's an issue. Do they all have magic the way they do in the Enchanted? I mean, they all, meaning Regina and Gold, or is it?
It appeared to be.
How is it altered, or how is it not? I mean, that'll be really interesting to see, because then.
Well, Regina seems to be able to do the.
Why doesn't Rumpel just go get Henry? I mean, I don't understand. You know,
Regina is very proficient at throwing fireballs. So.
Yeah, she's back to her X-Men routine.
Yeah,
and remember, Rumpel said, "It's not a question of will I survive if I go up against Pan and the Lost Boys, because we both know I won't."
Yeah, that was interesting.
So he's been there before. Mm.
And my
daughters, both of them were saying when a show first opened and they ran the clip again from last season, last episode, who are we up against? Someone we should all fear. And my younger daughter looks at me, she goes, you know, for Rumpel to say that means it's really bad.
True. But does he mean Peter Pan? It seems to me that's the one that he's referring to.
Yeah.
So Peter Pan is more dangerous. Well, we've seen some other villains next to Rumpel and Regina in the past. So, but it's going to be interesting to see how exactly, you know, what motivates Peter Pan to be this evil and to be after Henry. But let's not jump to that yet. Let's talk about the other two themes that are brought into play in the first part of this episode. It's faith and it's family. And both seem to be in crisis. Especially Emma seems to have lost her faith here, lost her faith in happy endings. She's blaming Snow White, which is kind of tragic. It's your fault. I'm blaming you. And you guys are so horribly optimistic. I mean, that's a terrible thing to say. You guys are just killing me with your optimism.
I don't think she lost anything.
I think it's like everything they'd been holding back for like the last season, they got to vent on each other in this one scene. It was awesome.
But what I
thought, I don't think Emma lost her belief. I don't think she ever really truly believed. I think she's always struggled with it.
I'm not sure. I mean, there were moments where she embraced it and where she even used magic to, you know, save people. And
yeah, but it's like what Gold says. She only believes if it's thrown in her face. Then, and after lots of pressure, then she believes, but it's not natural for her.
Well, it's true. Yeah, she, and perhaps it's just she's on a journey of learning to believe and learning to trust. And there are moments where that trust, where that faith is being put to the test. And she's even like, I should have never broken the curse, which is kind of almost biblical in resonance. It's like, you know, when Moses leads the people into the desert, and then at one point they, at first everybody's happy. Let's go away from here. And God is great. And so, and then after a while they get hungry and thirsty and they're like, ah, we should have never left. You know, we had a great time in Egypt. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's not true.
Did you notice that when she's arguing with Snow and she's accusing her and you know, ever since this, why don't I listen to you? You say good always wins and it doesn't, and I only have my own experience and we're the same age, and how come you're so optimistic? And Snow says to her, the minute I let go of the belief that things will get better is the minute I know they won't.
I love
that. And
then
and Rumpel comes up and says, you don't believe in your parents, you don't believe in magic, you don't even believe in yourself. And in the end, when she says, I'm the mother and I'm going to be the leader, that is a very big step for her in believing in herself.
Yes. And it's when you lose faith in a happy ending, what you lose is actually hope. And we've heard the writers, the creators of this series say time and again that this series is ultimately about family and about hope. And about hope that needs to be restored. And it's the fairy tales, it's the stories that give us hope, that show us that there are happy endings, that there are possible. So it's quite fundamental what happens here. And what I thought was interesting was that it is Rumpelstiltskin who actually invites Emma to take the leap of faith. Let's listen to the moment where that happens.
Why are you doing this?
Because I want to succeed.
What makes you think I'm going to fail?
Well, how could you not? You don't believe in your parents? Or in magic? Or even yourself?
I slayed a dragon, I think I believe.
Only what was shown to you.
When have you ever taken a real leap of faith? You know, the kind where there's absolutely no proof.
I've known you some time, Miss Swan. And sadly, despite everything you've been through, you're still just that bail bonds person, looking for evidence.
Well, dearie, that's not going to work in Neverland.
I'll do whatever it takes.
Well, you just need someone to tell you what that is. Sorry, dearie. Our foe is too fearsome for hand-holding. Neverland is a place where imagination runs wild.
And sadly,
yours doesn't.
I love that. I really, really dug that. It's like Neverland is a place where you have to believe. Without faith, you're not going to get anywhere. And it's almost as Emma as well. If that's what it takes, well, okay, well, I'll believe.
It ties in nicely with the way that Tamara and Greg described it to Henry when he asked if they were here to destroy Neverland, and they said it's the motherlode of magic.
Yeah, but I didn't really understand what they meant by that. Why is it the motherlode of magic?
Well, I wonder if it's because it's a place where imagination runs wild. If anything you can believe in, anything you can imagine can be true, that's magic. Magic is all about believing.
Yeah, it's high octane place of magic, I think.
And there's also something that they have there that they didn't necessarily have in the Enchanted Forest, or maybe not as much as we haven't been introduced to Tinkerbell yet. True. And the pixie dust, because, you know, it was all about that vial of pixie dust and, you know, the whole story, you know, he concocted, oh, you need to do this. Maybe they have this surplus of this magic dust that, you know, is the mother lode.
Hmm.
I don't know. Just a theory.
Mother Lode is the principal source or supply. Yes, I had to go look it up to make sure I was right. But if Neverland is the principal source or supply of magic, maybe Neverland is the, I don't know, the center point of all of these magical places.
The hub.
Hmm. The hub. There you go.
Could be. I like this theory that it is about the, you know, the unlimited imagination, that it's magic plus imagination. And it's not just self-serving magic for as a tool to accomplish something, but it is about, you know, as wild as you can get. And perhaps we you know, in a way, Peter Pan seems to be quite schizophrenic. Literally, he's like two people in one. He's like a split personality. And so who knows what that can do in combination with magic. It's like magic plus insanity. That is like a time bomb, perhaps.
And I also like the distinction between blind faith, like Tamara and especially Greg. We don't ask questions. We just believe in our cause. But there's also Emma, who questions, who's very skeptical. And Henry, it's just natural for him. Of course it's pixie dust. So give me the file. We're going to jump off a cliff. Yeah. Of course we can fly.
Faith of a
so
child.
So that's kind of the three kinds of how people approach faith. Mm-hmm. And also Henry asked Peter Pan, so how did you deceive Greg and Tamara? And he says something very interesting, that people, it's much easier for people to believe in something evil than into something good. So it's very, very easier to make them to lie to them and they will believe that more than the truth.
Yeah,
and I found that very interesting.
That's
too.
Very deep. I mean, I think it's true.
It's interesting that you brought that up. That was a quote near the end, that it's easier to get people to hate something than to believe, because when they were on the ship and they had captured the mermaid and the storm came and she said quite clearly, "I don't have to. You're going to kill yourselves." Hmm. And the more they fought, the worse the storm got.
Yeah,
the more they
expressed
their hate and acted upon their frustration and their anger. And like Lisa said, I love that they got to get it all out. And some of the best zingers came then. As soon as they were able to refocus on Emma basically sacrificing herself again, and they all refocused on what was important to them and realized they had to get along, that's when the storm abated.
Yes.
You know what? You had an 80s moment there. I had a Pirates of the Caribbean moment there. And I was like, hey, it's the time when Elizabeth Swann like pretended to fake pass out to get everybody to stop fighting amongst each other.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Elizabeth Swann.
Yeah,
Emma
pretty
Swann.
Good.
Isn't that a coincidence or not?
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. Cool. I want to take you back to the moment where we see the home office, well, which turns out to be the Lost Boys. Let's talk about the resolution of this. And basically, yeah, this whole mythology that was set up in the second part of season two. And I thought we were definitely going to see something that would be a bit akin to whatever, you know, entity was in play in the X-Files, or we've seen it in Alias and so many other TV series. Like, it's another one of those anonymous, you know, big companies. And it turns out it's just the Lost Boys. What do you think of that? Inga, you didn't like it. You were like, this is too easy.
Well, it causes some problems. So I was like, okay, if it's just the Lost Boys and there's no such thing as the home office, how the fancy equipment? How did Tamara get all the money? So it raises a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. And how did they go along in our world?
But Lisa, was it you who said that you actually liked the fact that they got rid of that?
I did, because the whole thing bothered me from the beginning. It felt like a detour to where we were going.
Uh-huh.
And so, I mean, it's obviously just, it happens on TV shows, you know, where they just go, whoops, and you just don't think too hard about it and you move on. And I'm kind of hopeful that that's what it is, because, you know, we did spend a lot of time on it. And I don't know, I just, they felt like distractions the whole time, Tamara and Greg. Didn't like them.
What about you, Shelley?
I'm fine with it.
I'm with Lisa. And we talked about it being something that came out of England or it being affected by somebody. But no, they've made it so that they want something. They want Henry. And we saw at the end of the last season that they've been wanting Henry for a couple hundred years. And they've had that picture of him, even from when Bay was young. Mm-hmm. And he was in Victorian England and got brought over to Neverland. The picture was of Henry. The irony, we talked about it, that they're showing it to his father who doesn't even know yet. Yeah. But I thought it was fine because we're moving forward. And clearly they've got a whole lot in store for us. And I'm fascinated to know the Peter Pan, the soul, the shadow, mm-hmm. ripping out your shadow, your soul. The Wraith was the one that sucked out the soul. Rumpel and Cora Regina, they all rip out hearts. They mm-hmm. they mm-hmm. all rip out life. They rip out soul. They crush it. They destroy it. But maybe they can put it back in some way. Maybe not with the heart because we saw it go into dust. But they got Philip back.
I think Tamara is a goner. She's not coming back. My regret was that I actually kind of like the intrigue that was added, the extra layer that was added with the Home Office. I just wish they had done it a little bit earlier in the previous two seasons and would have sustained it a little bit longer, because now it's like you introduce something and it is intriguing and it's mysterious and you kind of have this expectation that it's going to be a big reveal. And I agree with Inga that the way they kind of like nullified it was a bit too quickly and too short, but I understand why they did it, because I don't think it would work in the setting of Neverland. It has no function anymore. But I still felt that it was a bit quick and a bit too easy to do it this way. But then again, you know, perhaps it was superfluous in general, and the show being already so layered, multi-layered, it would have been too confusing to add it. But it has always felt to me like something that is more, you know, something from a series like Alias or Lost than something that has its place in a fairy tale series. That's just me. I felt sorry for them. I was like, gosh, they've been played all the time, and now Tamara is just killed like that. What a terribly terrible way to go. There's not even redemption for her.
I read somewhere that writers, when they do a show like this, they always leave an out or two for a character if it doesn't work, or the character, the actor, actress leaves for some reason, breaks contract.
Is Tamara going to another TV series? Is that it?
Wonderland. I don't know, but remember that their ratings we were talking last season about their ratings being low, and that some of the complaints being that they had too many characters and too many storylines and no one could keep up or keep track of who was what and where. So maybe this is their way of tightening it up a little bit and having a very focused approach to the story and getting their ensemble together. Tamara and Greg, they used them for what they needed in the last season. Now they've brought the ensemble in. They're here. It's established. And they could cut them loose.
Yeah. And I think that you touch on what the core of the problem is. The other characters that are now going on, they are an ensemble. They have relationships. Most of them are family. Whereas Tamara, mostly Tamara, seemed like almost like tacked on. She didn't really have an important connection with the rest. She just befriended Neil, because she wanted mm-hmm. to get to the others. But it's like, where do you come from? There's no relationship there. And even what's his name?
Greg.
Greg. He has a little bit more history with the fairy tale world because, his father was taken away or was made to. He's gone, right? He's killed.
Yeah. He was in the end of the last season. He was digging up.
Yeah.
The bones.
But it still was a bit like superfluous. It was a story threat that we didn't need, and his character was a bit like, okay, why are you here?
Anyway. I suspect they wanted to go somewhere else with that character, and it fizzled and did not mm-hmm. catch on the way they intended it to, and then they had to scrap it and redirect. It'd be nice to ask the writers that question later, you know. Hey, was that really?
But I think you're right. This is about consolidating the core group of people that we care for, and that let's be honest, that's why people watch this series, because you want to, you feel a connection to the main characters, and having too many people that you need to care for, it's just making it too complicated. That was one of the big things of Lost, where at one point, I think it was in the third season or the fourth season, there was just, you had the others, and then you had the people from the tail of the airplane, and then you had even more people that just start appearing, like background characters that all of a sudden got a main role, and it's like, come on, just stop it already, you know? It's too much. Let's talk about Neil and the reintroduction of three characters that we haven't seen for a long, long time.
Where am I?
You're in our kingdom.
Where's your kingdom?
The Enchanted Forest.
I'm back.
Back? You mean you're from here?
He's lying. Look at his clothes. He's from the same world Emma and Snow are from.
Emma Swan, you know her?
How do you know her?
She's my... Look, I need your help.
I need to know that Emma and Henry are right.
You're Henry's father? I was once under a sleeping curse. Snow taught me how to control the nightmare, and with practice, I'm able to walk the dream world, find others like me who've passed through. It's possible I can make contact with them.
So Sleeping Beauty is referring here to the equivalent of Skype in the fairy tale world, where she can use a dream to hopefully eventually connect with a lot of problems with other people. It's kind of how we are connecting for this podcast. What did you think of this reintroduction of Aurora, Mulan, and Philip? Anyone?
I liked it. I liked that Neil is back there. I liked the whole reintroduction of Neil to his home. It appears that he hasn't been there since he was a child, but clearly he has lots of memories, still likes to know it. And the interaction between Neil and Mulan was priceless. That's one of the things David Hanlos emailed. He couldn't be here, but he just had to say, look, I loved the exchange between Neil and Mulan. I mean, that whole meta reference about...
You're in a movie?
We're stories. Yeah. We're
a movie.
Tales,
I was...
Legend. There's a movie made about you. It's kind of good, too.
I had to, like... Well, first I was like, oh, a movie, yay, Disney reference. And then I was like, a movie? It's a 5,000-year-old mythology. Get it straight. Like, typical American only knows there's a movie about it.
Right.
Deborah, Disney can't sell a 5,000-year-old legend. Disney can sell copies of Mulan. When's the vault going to open and the new revisited, revised DVD HD Blu-ray will come out? $20 says it comes out this season.
I liked the bonding of Neil and Mulan. I thought it was nice. There was a lot of, you know, backstory and reference. And the question I had, though, was where'd Philip come from? Did we miss them saving him from the Wraith Soulsucker?
Oh, they didn't expand on that.
I saw Aurora and Mulan. They were, you know, arm in arm, like, let's go save Philip. Did we see that or
no?
Not.
No.
Okay.
But I think because they have the reference in the clip, is that she, some ways started to navigate this dream world or this other world, netherworld, but how they call it, and found Philip there.
That's probably one of those stories that they initially wanted to do in a flashback, and then they saw the ratings and it was like, forget about it. Let's just let some people write a book about it or do a comic, but you know.
It was Philip, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
Okay, because Neil and Mulan left to go to Rumple's old estate, and we didn't see Aurora or Philip after that.
Well, Aurora was still sleeping.
she was Skyping.
She's tired.
I just felt that Philip was a bit... I mean, I really like the characters of Aurora and Mulan, but Prince Philip always seems to be like if this were Star Trek, it would be he would be wearing a red shirt. Let's kill him off. You know, why is he there? Eye candy.
Aurora is not my favorite either. It's Mulan.
She got a new hairdo though. Did you notice?
Yeah, she did. Yeah.
Her hair was all poofy.
Yeah. Well, and Mulan looked different too.
I love that they asked him who he was, and he told them he was the son of Rumpelstiltskin, and you're the Dark One. He always said the Dark One, Rumpelstiltskin, and you're like, ooh, is that a good? I mean, Are people going to respond well to that in this world? This could be bad for you. You know,
I like the way he quips. Are you sure you don't want to see some ID? And he's like,
"Yeah, I love that." But that was with another character that we are going to talk about in a minute.
And where did his gunshot go? I mean, did that just magically heal?
Thank you.
Maybe he was passed out for a very long time. More time has passed in Neverland than it has in.
The bullet just comes out, and I mean, yeah.
Where do you think this story thread is going?
I loved that. That was good.
So where do you think this story thread is going? Well, you know, why this world?
I think Neil is going to, or are we calling him Neil or Balefire now? I think that he is going to learn to use magic. I think he is going to traverse that world and figure, because we saw him using magic in this episode, which was very interesting.
Yes. He even said how ironic it was. He spent his whole life trying to get away from it. Now he has to use it.
And that he can use magic of the Dark One because of I guess the blood relation or something. I wonder if they're setting him up to try to rescue, you know, Emma and Henry, because he's been to Neverland. He's very familiar with it. He knows she's there. And so I wonder if this is getting him invested in magic. And then we know when you start using magic, you know, something happens to you. So I wonder if it's going to make him go down a dark road. All four.
I like that theory. And I think it's there was a parallel between what happens to Neil and what happens to Emma in this episode. Both are being given a weapon, basically. Neil gets the walking stick of his father, and Emma gets Neil's sword, or Balefire's sword, and it's given to her by our pirate.
Hey, Rumple's given something, too.
Which
is... Yeah. Doll.
That's in the later.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the doll later, because we're getting ahead of ourselves, and I still have got audio clips to play. So let's play one. Here is the.
I have to make sure my work is not
exactly. Inge is now on the show, so I have to play these clips. Otherwise, her work is for nothing. Let's listen to the untimely death of Tamara here.
Thank you.
Where's Henry? They killed him.
I don't think so. I told him to run, and he did.
Why?
The jungle. Pan wants him. He's behind all this. Look, Mr. Gold, I didn't know who I was working for. I'm sorry about Neil. I'm so sorry.
I know. You were merely a pawn.
Forgive me.
No.
Yeah. That's the wrong question to ask. Can you forgive me? No, he can't. He's the Dark One. He has no mercy.
Hang on a second. Pan wants him. Redemption. Pan's behind all this?
Do what?
Sorry. She said Pan wants him. He's behind all this. Well, in the just previous scene, she was saying they don't ask questions. They didn't know who the Home Office was. And Henry's the one that said it's the Lost Boys. Well, how do they? I mean, that's a pretty big stretch to assume that it's Peter Pan that wants him and not the Lost Boys.
She realized that in her dying moments. Uh-oh. It came to her.
It's a slip. It's a little tiny slip. Something else got cut.
We've been seeing his redemption all this time. And suddenly it's like, no, I'm still me.
Yeah,
I loved it. Sorry.
Because he didn't go back to green, and when he did his little finger thing, he didn't do the little high-pitched giggle with it. Did you notice?
Yeah.
And he's tired. He's like, it's sarcastic. It's like, whatever.
Well, I love this expression on his face. Like, yeah, I have to do this quip. Okay, let's go. Let's get over with it.
Been there, done that. It's like, it's the way he says dearie. It's like, yeah, oh yeah, that's part of my vocabulary. That's what I used to say.
I could listen to that man talk all day long. I love that accent.
It's pretty cool. So Tamara, I thought that I saw Tamara kind of looking different. It's almost as if she knew a little bit more than Greg about the whole thing, or she was suspecting more than he was. He seemed to be a bit more naive than she is.
But I could see that because Well, I could see that because our theory was that Tamara came from magic. Technically, she came her what was it her grandmother. Fairy godmother or grandmother. Yeah. Oh, okay. Whereas Greg didn't come from magic.
Yeah. Yeah,
Greg
true.
Came from just a, you know, just was a witness to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe Tamara had a little more understanding of that world.
Could be, but I still have the feeling that this is a story threat that they won't expand upon. We will really never see the background of this because they've moved on and it's now the end of it. It's kind of a, it's a pity. But then in exchange, we get fried fish.
What is this?
What did you do?
Let me go.
Not until you tell us.
Or we make you tell us.
Threatening her isn't the way to motivate her.
Well, I'm all out of fish food.
Doesn't matter if you get a good talk. You can't trust the mermaids are liars.
Of course they are. Maybe they're just scared of Pan. If we let her go, maybe they'll be on our side.
Or maybe she and her friends will come right back to kill us.
I don't need my friends to kill you. You'll kill yourselves. Now let me go.
And then the storm begins, the perfect storm. Well, we've seen that Neverland is a lot darker than it is in the original Disney movie. And now the mermaids that are all friendly and kind to Peter Pan in the Disney version are evil as well. And I kind of like that because the mermaids originally, in the original mythology, especially if you combine it with the Greek mythology of the sirens, mermaids were evil. They were mm-hmm. dangerous. They were trying to lure pirates to their death, or pirates are just you know, people on ships, and they were often associated with disasters when you're at sea, especially storms. You know, they were believed to be the cause of that. So
it fits well with the Lady of the Lake who lures them in. She was a siren, lures them in underwater and drowns them in the first season.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, true. Yeah. Yes.
My kids, we realize, have never seen Peter Pan, the Disney cartoon.
Okay.
And so this weekend, we watched it purposely because we knew this season of Once Upon a Time was going to be Neverland, and they have no concept of Peter Pan or any. They're so deprived. So we watched it, and I'd forgotten, talking about the mermaids, they tried to drown Wendy in the cartoon.
Yeah, that's true.
And, you know, I'd forgotten that. So it was nice to revisit it, and because I, you know, that Tinkerbell was quite not a good Tinkerbell, you know, unlike the little Disney movies now with Tinkerbell. So
they also reminded me, in the way that they were depicted in this episode, of the Harry Potter movie where you have the mare people, I think they're called.
Mm-hmm.
This is in the story where Harry Potter and his friends have to go through all these trials and tests, and there's this contest between the various schools of wizardry, and then you have these very, very creepy mermaid-like creatures that are so vicious and very, very scary. And here too, I was a bit. The only problem that I have with it is that, is this mermaid that they caught? Is that supposed to be the Little Mermaid?
No.
Oh.
There has been during the hiatus, there has been a clip released where one of the dwarves is sitting at a docks in Storybrooke, and then suddenly his lunch got stolen, and then you see a mermaid with bright red hair.
Actually, do you want? That's a spoiler. I was going to say for
no.
Spoiler.
Let's not talk about spoilers. But that is interesting. I'm relieved now because I was confused. I was like, come on, don't do this. This is just, I like the Little Mermaid movie too much for this character to be evil. What's her name again in the
Ariel.
Ariel. Mm-hmm. But apparently most of her friends are not that kind. And so you can't trust them. They're lying. But ultimately, what this mermaid does is it's, well, who is lying, you know? Because they're all revealing their true, well, at least their own dark sides when they're starting to, this terrible fight, which is so vicious and, you know, has the eternal line about the the rainbow kisses and what was it? Unicorn stickers.
Another 1980s throwback.
So where does this come from? Because it did. I was like, okay, that sounds familiar, but is it a song or is this a?
Well, I had to think about My Little Pony because it was also a cartoon of My Little Pony with a rainbow. He had the. How do you say it? The Care Bears are you also with a rainbow.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God. And you had Rainbow Bright. Boy. And then it's very 80s.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So then, yeah little girls would be collecting stickers of that. So okay. I had to think about that.
I'm pretty sure we had lots of unicorn stickers in our house.
Oh, yeah. And rainbows.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And I hate to tell you this, but right now I am not joking. Within arm's reach is all of my little ponies. All of them.
Oh, boy. But my question is, the plot hole here is, how does Regina know about these things? Because she had a son. Don't tell me that Henry has been playing with unicorns and rainbow stickers.
All girls know about these things.
Snow is our age. So Snow White's our age. So her cursed self would have played with rainbow stickers. And unicorn stickers, I think.
Well, actually, you're right, because we just made a big deal last season about it being 1983. And that's when all of this was really, really popular. 1983 was rainbow stickers and Care Bears and My Little Pony, very first edition of My Little Pony.
When is it 1983? I'm confused now.
83. Welcome to Storybrook. Mm-hmm. Episode Welcome to Storybrook.
Lands in our world.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Remember, so what was it like? So Regina must have gone through that. At least she knows about the culture in the 80s.
Yes.
All right. Well, that solves it for me. I was a bit confused. I at one moment I was like starting to lose my faith in Henry. It's like, please tell me that you're not, you know, you don't have My Little Pony puppets. I love that. By the way, that was a pretty intense scene, but I really liked it. I love the way in which their fights kind of generate this storm, and it looks like magic, but it's just a world reacting to what's happening. And that isn't that the kind of the essence of Neverland? Your imagination generates the reality, and so in this case, it's like evil and fighting creates storm. And it's the moment that they lose Emma and they realize, well, we got to stick together. We got to save her. That's when also the storm goes away. I love that.
And it's like that Rumpel knows Neverland very well. He also knows that this toxic, or I say that's very volatile combination of people will be a nuisance rather than a blessing in Neverland. So that's why he goes after for himself, for his own.
Yeah, but it makes him also very dangerous, because if it's true for them, then it's also true for Rumpel, right? So if he has a huge imagination, he might actually be more powerful than he was in the world of fairy tales, or in the Enchanted Forest. Anyway, I there was another moment that I thought was brilliant. It is when Regina turns the mermaid into a wooden mermaid, just like the ones you see on the bow of the ships, of the pirate ships. I thought it was brilliant.
And it made you think of Pinocchio.
Yeah, that too, a little bit, yes. But I just love the way that we're on this pirate ship and then you've got a wooden mermaid. I was like, that is just perfect. And then we go to, we go back to the Enchanted Forest. We go back to Neil and to the house that once belonged to Rumpelstiltskin, and we get introduced to a new character, at least new for me, or perhaps I missed something, and it's Robin Hood. Where does he come from?
He's camping water.
didn't we get introduced to him last season? Remember his wife was pregnant? Not wife, but what's her name?
Maid Marian?
Maid Marian, yeah. But they ran into Regina, and what's interesting is that Robin Hood said he owed a debt to Rumpel.
Yes,
was that part of last season? Did we see that with him?
Yes, remember Rumpel shot the arrow, and the arrow always goes to where you intended it. And Belle was like, "Did you mean to shoot that person?"
That's right.
And he was like, "No, I'm trying not to make a big deal out of it."
That's right.
I could have used a little reminder because it's been such a long time since I saw season two.
That may also
be a different actor, too.
I can't remember what the episode was, is my problem.
So what I remember is with Belle, there was a flashback, and Robin Hood was burgling the mansion.
Okay.
And because he wanted to have something to cure Lady Marian.
Yeah. No, mm-hmm. It was the fleece.
Oh, yeah, he was after the fleece. So anyway, Robin Hood is back. It seems to me that he might actually stick around and team up with the others. At least, I
think he's supposed to. Uh-huh.
I think that would be cool.
I liked his interaction with them. He did well, and he is the one who said who would claim to be, what was it? He said, you know, I'm the son of the Dark One, and you need ID. And he said, you know. Why? Because who would claim to be that? You know?
Right. And his own encounter with Rumpelstiltskin was kind of touch and go. So I'm pretty sure that's something they're going to show us in a flashback. They have to. But
they already did.
Oh, okay. They already did. Well, anyway, so it was so touch and go that I don't even remember it. But I like to have him on board because he's a sympathetic character and he's got a British accent and it does make Philip even more of a red shirt. Kill him off.
I wonder if they're going to bring Philip and Aurora back if they give Bay Neil a way to communicate or at least to connect with Neverland through the crystal ball. You know, if he's got the crystal ball and he can see, or maybe there's something else that's in the cabinet, will we see Aurora and Philip come back, or was that it for them?
I don't know. Let's play a clip here of the moment that Neil finds Rumple's walking stick, which turns out to be almost like a staff, like the ones that Gandalf is carrying around in Middle Earth. It confuses even more.
What's magical? The knotted old cane probably belonged to one of the looters.
No, it belonged to him. See these markings? He's keeping track of me growing.
I've handled that walking stick a dozen times. Never released a cloaking spell before.
My father enchanted objects so that what might be a useless piece of wood in the hands of a looter would become magical in his.
Or in the hands of his only son.
They called it blood magic. Might not always seem like it, but family was important to dear old dad.
I've handled that walking stick a dozen times. Am I the only one who is like, huh? Why would you? That's a bit weird. Anyway. So the magical walking stick and blood magic. So apparently that's magic that's a bit like the new iPhones that just work when it scans your fingerprint. Like, oh, your family, so you can use the magic. That's kind of cool. I didn't know that existed.
Walking stick 5. See,
I'm not sure it did until this episode.
but it's interesting. Well, so would Rumple have meant Bale to, you know, to find that cabinet? I don't know.
No, I think it just was one of those little tricks of the trade that
it just worked for Rumple and his family, but he probably wasn't aware of that.
Well, didn't Neil say that he wanted, the reason he went to that mansion was that Rumpel was looking for Neil, and so he would have left something behind in order for Neil to find him again.
Yeah, he always had a plan.
Yeah,
he would have left something I could use to contact him.
Okay,
that's what it was.
There was, of course, a very short moment where we see the entire cabinet and we see all sorts of objects. Was there any? Is there anyone who is? I didn't see any freeze frames of this, but it was the prototypical once upon a time moment where, you know, the fans are like, oh, ooh, look at that, ooh, what is that?
There was a white box in the top right of the cabinet. Had ruins on it.
Runes.
Runes. And I don't know runes, but I don't know what they meant. I haven't looked to see if there was a.
They
Anybody
did look
online.
A lot like the runes, like the Tolkien runes that we see.
And then there were 8 long pipes or wands. They were long wooden things. I couldn't tell if they were meant to have a pipe at the bottom, you know, like a hobbit pipe or the dwarves, you know, this we say seven dwarves. There
don't
were
tell
eight.
Me that we're going to get a hobbit crossover. Then I'm going to my head is going to explode.
Like a puzzle box. And this was the only thing that was really identifiable.
Okay. Yeah, there was nothing in there that struck me in particular, except for the box with the runes on it. And I was like, wow, that looks suspiciously like the stuff that we see in The Lord of the Rings and in The Hobbit. But, well, I'm sure that there are some fans that have figured out what this is. And perhaps in one of the other podcasts, they can crack the code and tell us what this is all about.
Yeah, you would think it would be objects that are very valuable. So he needs to hide them with a cloaking spell. Yeah. But... yeah, those objects seem to be very mundane to me, except for the lightning, the crystal ball.
Yeah. So anyway, the crystal ball works and it connects. That's also a kind of a Skype metaphor. Or is it more like, what's the iPhone
Palantir.
Thing? Yeah, the Palantir. Yes, it does. It does actually. It does like, huh, perhaps the whole Tolkien thing is intentional. And they want to evoke the Palantir and the runes. We got to talk about this in our next episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit, which is another podcast that we do over at SQPN. In case you're listening to this series for the first time, we actually have a ton of podcasts about movies, about all sorts of stories. And one of the shows that we do is Secrets of the Hobbit, which is about the movies, the trilogy that is currently made in New Zealand. Which I visited, by the way, just a few weeks ago. It was amazing. But anyway, I'll talk about that in my own show, which is, by the way, called The Break, which you can find at thebreak.sqpn.com. Oh, this is so terrible, all these ads in the show. Let's talk about a big, big mystery, something that is introduced in this episode, and I really want to hear your theories about this. It is the... doll.
If you're here for the boy, that makes you Pan's enemy.
Then nothing's changed.
If you go against him, you will not survive.
Well, the question isn't, will I survive? Because we both know I won't. No. The real question is, how many of you I take with me?
So is that your answer?
That's my answer.
One last thing. There's something he wanted you to have. Isn't it funny? The things we haven't thought about in years still have the ability to make us cry. See you around. Dark one.
Okay, I was like, what on earth is that? And why would Rumpel cry about this? Any theories?
Yes. I have a far-fetched one that you'll laugh about.
Go ahead.
Let's hear Deborah's first.
That Baio has a twin sister that is also from the Dark One and has been kept hidden.
What?
Are we channeling a little Star Wars here?
I think you've been in Nebraska too long.
Her name is Leia?
Wherever you are now.
Little Princess Leia action.
So the doll is hers?
so we've hidden...
Well,
you know,
Star Wars is owned by Disney now, right?
I know. Really? But didn't strike me as a Star Wars action figure.
No. It's Bay. It's Bay. He's crying because of Bay, because he knows Bay is dead. Or they
dead. No.
And Bay is dressed up in a pirate costume. He's wearing Hook's blue jacket. That the doll is Bay in a blue jacket. So Rumpel's been to Neverland before. He must have seen Bay. He was there trying to find Bay. So he must have found Bay and seen that he was becoming like Hook. He's identifying Bay and Hook are more like a father-son figure. Even Hook mentioned it when Emma said, "How long was he with you?" And he said, "Long enough for me to miss him too." Mm-hmm. And now this. And then there's the movie Hook with Robin Williams. And remember, Hook adopted Peter Pan's son. He adopted the little boy and dressed him up just like himself. And that was the big thing at the end. Peter Pan and Robin Williams had to come up there. And was I the only one that saw this movie?
No, I did see it a long time ago.
It was so quiet. And so that's what I think. I think he's reminding him that he lost his son. He found his son. His son was with Hook, his enemy. He lost Mila to Hook. He lost Bay to Hook. Pan kept him from taking the boy for whatever reason. He protected him from getting Bay from Hook. Rumpel went back, was going to try and get him, or maybe that's when Bay got sent to the real world, because we don't know when Bay got out of Neverland back into 1984, so that he could grow up about roughly the same age as Emma. There's a lot of backstory. It's fabulous. They're gonna lay it all out. It's gonna be great. It's gonna be a good season.
I believe you. I have faith in this season.
I was thinking further back that it had something to do with Rumpel's childhood. But
yeah,
maybe
that's what I was thinking as well. I think maybe it's a doll that he himself made. And that, because this theme of this episode was also self-identity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Rumpel has grown up that he was a son of a coward. And mm-hmm. and he now has himself has a son. So I think it has something to do with maybe something he himself made, and that reminded him of the fact that he was a son of a coward.
I like that theory.
He would be crying because yeah. if he would be Bale's doll and it would be with Hook, I was like, yeah, but he already dealt with that.
Yeah, we've seen him grieve about losing his son.
So this must be something new.
Hmm.
You got a point there, because he said the things we haven't thought about in years. And he's been thinking about Bay for a long time. So
yeah, also with Hook, he's been on the same vessel with Hook, so that he has been thinking about that recently, at least.
Seems like an awfully powerful emotion to me to just be about Bay dying.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think it has to do something with the doll reminding him being a son of a character.
It's still going to be a great season.
And it's definitely, well, the puppet is introduced to disarm him or to weaken him. That's for sure. We're almost done with the series now. There is also Henry, of course. We haven't talked much about him, and he's being saved, we think at least first, by it looks like he's a defector from the Lost Boys. Now, is his name Felix? Did I see that in the IMDb database? I never thought we heard his name.
We did not.
I think Felix is the somewhat older leader of the Lost Boys, who also comes up to. Mm-hmm. To Rumpel.
Okay, I didn't know that. But anyway, the name Felix, when I saw that in the cast listing, is like, that's interesting, because Felix, of course, means luck or happiness. And it seems to be that both luck and happiness are the thing that the Lost Boys have lost. They've lost happiness, they've lost faith, they've lost hope. And so the only thing they can think of is revenge, and it's just evil thoughts. It's not happy thoughts. And you need happy thoughts to actually get away from Neverland. So I'm very intrigued by, you know, what happened to Neverland? What happened to these Lost Boys? Because they all seem to be hopeless. Even the boy that turns out to be Peter Pan, he's like, I'll never go back. It's over. And he needs Henry, and puts him to this what turns out to be a test, because Henry proves that he is actually the truest believer. He has what Peter Pan and all the other Lost Boys seem to be lacking sorely, and that is faith. And it's the faith of a child. You know, Henry's like, let's just jump. You know, you might not believe, but I believe. And then the pixie dust seems, works. And they fly around in this green haze that reminded me more of what's that, the superheroes with the ring,
Green Lantern.
Green Lantern stuff. then it reminded me of the Disney movie. But so I think that the big thing here that Henry can bring them is faith. And I think the mistake they make is that they think they can actually steal that. Because faith is a choice. It's something that needs to come from your own heart, and you cannot just take it from someone else. As a tool that you can use to get back. So I think it's very interesting what they're introducing here. And while I've got my final clip here that I'm going to play, or it's actually Inga that prepared it for us, the closing scene between Henry and Peter Pan.
I am Peter Pan.
But you told Greg and Tamara that magic was bad. You'd help them destroy it. Why?
Because I needed their help.
And it is so much easier to get people to hate something than to believe.
Why did you bring me here?
For quite some time, I've sought something extremely important. Something more elusive than the greatest of all mysteries.
What?
The heart of the truest believer. And when you took that pixie dust, Henry, and jumped off that cliff, you proved yourself. You are the lucky owner of that very special heart. And now, you and it are mine. Come on, boys! Let's play!
He sounds like a drug addict. Come on, boys!
Did you notice the British accent as well?
Yeah, yeah. Well, the story is British, right? So, but you know what the big thing, the big mystery is of this episode? It's like Henry Mills, who plays, or actually Jarrett Gilmore, who plays Henry Mills, doesn't seem to age. He looks exactly like in the previous two episodes, previous two seasons. Is that because of Neverland? I mean, how does that work? I was
so online that said he's actually grown a bunch.
Okay,
he's a lot taller now than he was.
Oh, they must have filmed this very early then, because it's typically the age where, you know, after a season like that, the guy comes back and is like, "Hi, I'm Henry."
Wasn't that also the problem with a guy in Lost, the child?
Yeah, there was a boy, and they
kill him off because
yes, and we never saw him back because you know.
And he's 13, so he's a little 13.
Yeah. Well, interesting.
Maybe they feed him something.
No, I hope not.
My 11-year-old's taller than I am, so he's a little bitty.
Well, but I thought actually he did a great job in this episode. I liked his acting. So pretty cool. So it was all, and then we get the whole thing by Peter Pan, like hating is easier than believing. It all indicates, I think, that the Lost Boys are really what their name indicates. They have lost their faith. They've lost their soul, perhaps even. You know, Neverland is like hell or purgatory.
Purgatory.
Yeah. And then we're back to Lost. It was all purgatory.
I wonder if someone would make that reference that they're now stuck on an island. You know,
oh, gosh. Yes, you're right.
There's a lot of Lost.
I've been biting my tongue for the entire episode.
It's not going to be Lost, though.
Through the jungle.
The writers have said in a recent interview that they've learned too much from, you know, being writers on the show Lost to make the same mistakes again, even though that might be a bit too optimistic. There were some mistakes in these few seasons, but I'm stoked, and I think we're going to be in Neverland for quite a while now, which brings me to spoiler territory. So in case you have to leave because you don't like spoilers, and you know, we're just going to play the promo and do a little bit of speculation before
Father,
we round off. Yes?
David Hamless wanted to make sure we brought up his main point.
Okay, the main point.
It's
not a spoiler.
It goes right before your spoiler. So.
Oh, very good.
David wrote in his email, his main question really about Peter Pan says he spent all this time trying to find the heart of the truest believer. What does he plan to do with it? He says, if Neverland really is a place that runs on belief, as Emma says, are the possibilities endless for someone who believes more powerfully than anyone else? Is it going to be like the Matrix, where is Henry, who is the truest believer, is he going to be able to control and manipulate reality? And what is Pan trying to harness? Is he trying to harness that faith, the blind faith of a child that maybe he's lost, he's become jaded himself? And if so, to what end?
Interesting.
Big questions.
That's a very, very good point. I think that Peter Pan is naive, and he thinks that as long as he's got a true believer, he can just take it and use it for himself. And I somehow also feel that Tinkerbell is going to have something to do with this. And then she is going to either save Henry, or she's, I don't know, trying to save Peter Pan. Something is up there. And doesn't Peter Pan himself kind of, like, shakes in the original Disney movie? It's been a long time since I've seen that. Like, he's shaking Tinkerbell to get some pixie dust out of her. It's like the same kind of, like, attempt to kind of force magic or kind of,
He relies on her for the magic.
Yeah.
Or at least for her flying.
Yeah.
For flying.
Well, and we don't know how he's got all these Lost Boys working for him. They've all been brought there as he searches for the heart of the truest believer. And as far as we've been seen so far, they're all trapped there.
Yeah.
So, and now here comes our ensemble of hero, villain, mother, savior,
Justice,
whatever.
Yes.
Thank you. The Justice, the Avengers. Yeah. They've all
the Avengers
all
League.
And Pan, when he was not exposing himself, told Henry that Pan and his forces are in tune with every grain on this island. Mm. Well, they just walked up on the beach. So,
yep.
You know, that's going to be an interesting thing to see.
Definitely.
Yeah. I think it has to also, if the reason that Tamara and Greg are pawns of Pan, I think maybe Pan tries to do the same with Henry, make Henry his pawn, so he can use Henry's magic, because he cannot use it himself right now, apparently.
All right. Well, it's time to move over to the preview, the promo for the next episode, because I'm sure that we will get to know a lot of these secrets very, very soon. And I'm so glad that the first part of the season is going to run without interruptions. So we're in for a treat, I think. We're going to have like 12 episodes in a row. So no waiting, because there's some, you know, sports event going on in the United States. When will you guys learn that sports can just be on another channel? Oh, well, it's just me. So for those of you that are walking away before the spoilers, thank you so much for listening. Hope you enjoyed this, and we'll be back next week as well. Check out sqpn.com for all our other shows. And now let's listen to the sound of promo number 2.
Henry's out there somewhere. There's hopefully not too late.
ABC next Sunday, the deeper you journey into the heart of Neverland.
But how do we know Pan won't lead us straight into a trap?
This whole island's his bloody trap.
The more dangerous.
I'll let him keep Henry. He allows me to live.
And surprising it becomes.
I'm Peter. Peter Pan.
Where's my son?
Once upon a time. All new next Sunday at 8, 7 central on ABC. And watch a sneak peek of next week's episode now at ABC.com.
ABC.com.
So, it's pretty cool. So, we're going, into the heart of the island, into the heart of darkness. Isn't that a novel?
I thought of that, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's cool. I've looked it up on Wikipedia. So, Heart of Darkness is a short novel written by Joseph Conrad, presented as a frame narrative about Charles Marlowe's job as an ivory transporter down the Congo River in Central Africa. And then he just goes, you know, deeper and deeper into the darkness of the jungle. And it seems to me that that is kind of the narrative that they're going to follow in the next few episodes. And aren't they searching for a Kurtz or something? Kurtz? Mr. Kurtz? I don't know. I'm going to read up on this and we'll talk about it next week. Because I love this idea that the island is going to reveal its secrets over time, as the more they go into the darkness of the island, the more of the mysteries will be solved. You know what? This could be a great television series. The Lost Boys. I'm just saying. All right. Time to wrap things up. It is a joy to be back with the show. I apologize that I'm a bit hoarse. My voice is not... Yeah, I'm recovering from a nasty cold. But I was glad that I had enough voice to talk with you. And then, of course, it was great to be joined by Deborah, Shelley, Lisa, and Inga. Thank you so much. And even by Dave, virtually, thanks for his contributions as well. We'd love to hear your thoughts. You can reach us on our website. Inga, what is it again? It's been such a long time. Is it
onceuponatime.sqpn.com.
onceuponatime.sqpn.com. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week. So long. And farewell.
Thanks for all the fish.
And thanks for all the fish. The fried fish.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.